It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Overnight, the Israeli military assassinated an Islamic Jihad militant by the name of Baha Abu al-Atta. This militant was accused by the Israeli intelligence services of firing and ordering the firing of a number of rockets into southern Israel. According to the prime minister, he had a number of other attacks planned. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke this afternoon in Israel. He said that his side would not like to see an escalation, but that is not necessarily going to be what happens. As we are speaking right now, in the distance, there are rockets being intercepted by Israel's missile defense system, the Iron Dome. Earlier this morning, more than 150 rockets were fired into southern Israel. One of those rockets, very close to where we are standing, misfired, slammed into a building. The building we are in took shrapnel. Take a look at the scene. As dozens of rockets are fired into southern Israel, the Israelis are now responding, striking targets inside the Gaza Strip. Just moments ago, this building was hit. There were multiple people inside. We've seen a number of injured people come out, and they are looking to see whether or not anyone is injured or killed inside the building. While you were listening to that sound, another explosion off in the distance as Islamic Jihad continues its barrage of rockets into southern Israel. We saw some CCTV footage of a rocket impacting a highway near the small Israeli town of Sderot. This is a town along the Israel-Gaza border. I did receive a text from a senior Hamas official, that is the group in control of the Gaza Strip, this morning. He said, quote, major escalation expected. The factions here vowing to respond to what they call Israeli aggression. Again, right now as we are speaking in the distance, rockets are being fired into southern Israel. Certainly going to see a number of developments throughout the day.
All right, that was Trey Yangs of Fox News just this morning, and that's what's happening to our the apple of God's eye today, under barrage and under attack. You know, they're using the Iron Dome, as I understand it. That Iron Dome is fascinating. I actually heard the inventor of the Iron Dome explain how it works in Israel on one of my trips, and it is a computerized device that tracks the GPS location of the missile coming their way. And it is able to then, I don't know, I guess it would be like the old heat-seeking missiles, but it's much faster and much more accurate. It you know, you don't launch it by saying, you know, entering in target points. It just is so smart. It finds the object that's being launched toward Israel, and then it takes it out. And they have but they cost a ton of money, and they don't have an unlimited supply. And so, as Trey explained, and later in that conversation, the Israelis cannot take out every single mortar that's being lobbed at them through the Iron Dome. So it's hard. You could see that. You could hear it in his voice, that nervousness. Boy, when you're in a situation like that, I'm sure most of you have experienced that in your life, where you're in some sort of an emergency and your voice gets higher and faster. He was in a helmet on top of a building and right in the middle of the danger. So we need to pray for Israel. I also think about their elections being all jammed up, as ours are too, their politics all jammed up. Bibi Netanyahu just hanging on by threads and, you know, being sued and all, you know, all the barrage of attacks. So things are not settled. And you know, I'm sure that the enemies smell that weakness and know that the government is kind of unstable right now. And so this is what's happening in Israel this morning. Now, speaking of this morning, the Supreme Court is going to begin oral arguments on the Dreamer, so-called Dreamer. Of course, that's what they called it because it's such a lovely term. But Dreamers actually are people who have been brought here. It was in 2012 when Barack Obama just decided, out of the goodness of his own heart, to declare that these illegal immigrants, they were brought by illegal parents and born here illegally, Have been staying like under the radar. Barack Obama decided just by his own word, he spoke it and thus it was, that they should be legalized, that they should be able to get driver's licenses and health insurance and all of it. And the problem is, of course, that only the Congress has a right to do something like that, to change the law so that people who are here illegally can suddenly be treated like they are here legally just by fiat of a president. Obama knew that at the time. He expressed it. And remember that, I remember well that Mitch McConnell and others, Republican establishment types, latched onto that and said they would be the first, they would repeal it, you know, root and branch, Obamacare and also DACA. But of course, they did nothing. Yeah, they did nothing. And so it's made its way to the Supreme Court. And let me just read, this is from a report from Sundance, and he says, the case is called DHS versus Regents of the University of California. The Obama Office of Legal Counsel did not fully support the constitutional framework around the effort to protect a subset of illegal aliens, and therefore the originating presidential action was not an official executive order, a technicality that could end up as part of the argument. The same issue existed on the companion, which is DAPA, Deferred Action for Parents of Arrivals. And it was ruled unconstitutional by SCOTUS after Barack Obama tried to put that in place. So DACA has been put into place in the same way, and it should follow the same pattern. But of course, we don't know that. We don't know what's going to happen because John Roberts is so flaky. I don't know. I don't mind saying he's just flaky. We know that in June he blocked a citizenship question from being placed on the 2020 sentence. He's an unreliable justice, and as it stands, the justices are 5-4 Republican appointees to Democratic appointees, but I'd say he's the unreliable vote, so we don't know what's going to happen. We won't know till next spring, and of course that will be right in the thick of the presidential election. Why should DACA recipients not be legalized? Why isn't it heartless that they should be bound by the fact that their parents brought them in illegally? I always say it's like if your parents stole money from their employer, lots of money, and right, you didn't know it, but you were raised with that money. You drive nice cars, you have a nice home because of the money that belonged to someone else. You are not allowed to keep that. So your parents stole something from this country. And you are not legalized just because you didn't know about it. You have to reap the consequences of what your parents did. And also, then, of course, DACA has been an encouragement for the hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants who've come across the border, just hoping that they will just be, with a magic wand, granted, you know, the rights of citizenship. And then, of course, we have the dangers. There are real consequences to this. Elizabeth Warren made a statement over the weekend on the campaign trail that should sort of put some context to this. Let's listen to clip 18.
I wanted to ask you a question today about healthcare access. Restrictions to ADA and Medicare meant that in 2017, approximately 6.3 million non-citizen immigrant women of reproductive age were far more likely to be uninsured than naturalized immigrants or citizen women. We know that you have included undocumented people in your plans to provide Medicare for all. So my question is, why did you decide to include people regardless of immigration status? And would this include obtaining subsidies like the ACA's Affordable Care Act, affordability subsidies? And second, would you also support access to the Children's Health Insurance Program without regard to immigration status?
Okay, good. So let's start. No, I'm really glad you asked this. Medicare for all, as I put this together, covers everyone, regardless of immigration status. And that's it.
Yeah, and that's it. And so here's the thing. Really, the choice and the difficulty is, after all of these years of being an American citizen, you and I, and paying like into Social Security or Medicare for older folk, so suddenly now everything that you put in will go to pay for illegal immigrants if Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and most of the people running on the Democratic side of the aisle have their way. They want to grant equal rights and equal opportunity and equal access to all kinds of programs that Americans have worked hard to fund. to illegal immigrants. And that simply means that your children will not get those benefits. It's just, I can't even believe we have to explain this, but we do. And so this is a problem. And sort of related to that are a couple of stories today. Texas has found 95,000 non-citizens on its voter rolls, and 58,000 have already voted. And Attorney General Paxton and the Secretary of State have done an analysis of what's happening in Texas, and they're trying to move to change that. But you can see how if this moves in that direction, this is how Texas, certainly, this is one of the efforts to turn it blue. Also in Florida, there is a red flag by the Public Interest Legal Foundation, and Public Interest Legal Foundation is J. Christian Adams' organization. You know Christian well because he hosts for me sometimes. But they did an audit and found that 24,000 voter files in Palm Beach County alone in Florida, they came out in double voting, voting on behalf of the dead, and voting by apparent non-citizens. And so this is what's happening in states around the globe, and to put globe around the country. And to put this in perspective, you know that Virginia was just roundly lost last Tuesday. Now, there were a number of factors, but not the least of which is a plan by Eric Holder, the former attorney general under Barack Obama. Remember, he said he was his wingman. He's Obama's wingman. So they've been working together. Mr. Holder, right after Donald Trump was elected, launched this National Democratic Redistricting Committee. And the idea was to, they were committed to dominate the electoral map making through courts and legislatures. So they spent a lot of money, and Barack Obama helped them with this. And it was because of their efforts against redistricting in favor of conservatives, that partly to blame for what happened in Virginia. And so they've got 11 key states that they want to take over next year. And two of those are Florida and Texas. Let's see if I can find the others, just so you can see. There are 11 of them, Florida, Georgia, and Texas. I don't see the others itemized here, but there are 11 of them. And they're trying to do it by changing the redistricting policies. They call it fairness in the electoral system, but they never go to blue states. They never accuse of the northeastern states of like Maryland, Massachusetts, and New Jersey of doing gerrymandering districts because of their Democratic legislatures to advantage Democrats. They never appear there. But, you know, it's all about fairness. But fairness is, of course, a lie because they have something in mind for all of these states. And I love this because Governor Abbott of Texas, those of you in Texas, you got a great governor. Let's just say this is what he tweeted in response to this. He said this story, the one I just read you was Kim. Well, at least I took the information from it. It was Kim Strassel in the Wall Street Journal. And by the way, we'll put that on our Facebook page. It's Eric Holder takes Virginia, and she lays it out and then talks about the other states as well. This story explains how Eric Holder, Barack Obama, George Soros, and others spent $50 million to win Virginia legislative seats to control the redistricting process. Now they target a Texas takeover. We'll remind Eric Holder not to mess with Texas. That's from Governor Abbott. And, of course, Governor Abbott, I have to add this. It's not related to illegal immigration or voting, but it's just a great story. You've probably all been watching what's happening in Austin. Austin is a sanctuary city, so self-declared, and they've been allowing homeless people to encamp in public places. And Governor Abbott said that Texas is having none of that. And so Texas officials went in and cleared out the homeless. I was talking about needles and feces like they've seen in San Francisco and Seattle and other states. Governor Abbott has established a camp 3 miles outside of Austin that'll have portable restrooms, hand washing stations, and food provided by local charities. He's taking the bull by the horns. Ben Carson weighed in on this and said some people think that being compassionate means allowing these people to just be wherever they want to be. That's not compassion. Compassion is figuring out why they're in that situation and correcting it. And so it's just interesting. God bless Texas Governor Greg Abbott. And that's kind of the beginning of this morning, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
I've never forgotten Cademan. Hi, it's Michael with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. I visited Eastern Africa and worshipped outdoors on a 100-degree Sunday. Some of those had walked 2 hours just to be there. And afterwards, I met Cademan, a man about 30 with a wife and two children. He was hunched over a table, copying scriptures from an open Swahili language Bible onto a piece of paper. He was frantic as he wrote quickly, but then his face grew sad as he closed that Bible and returned it to its rightful owner. You see, in this congregation of 500, fewer than 10 had a Bible. I've never forgotten Cademan, this godly brother, desperate to take a few scriptures into his week to grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus. And that's why I love what Bible League does, engaging the world with the hope of God's Word. Will you be a part of this kingdom work?
Call 800-YES-WORD, 800-YESWORD. That's 800-YES-WORD. Or click sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment each day to pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Andrew Wheeler, administrator for the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Wheeler oversees the agency and the more than 14,000 employees who conduct environmental assessment, research, and education. Genesis 1:1 reminds us that the earth is God's perfect creation. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask for wisdom and guidance for Andrew Wheeler as he works to maintain and enforce environmental standards in the United States. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
The University of Virginia canceled the 21-gun salute portion of its Veterans Day ceremony, citing gun violence. James Ryan, the university's president, posted a statement on Facebook, said there were concerns about firing weapons on school property in light of recent shootings. As you might imagine, the outrage among veterans has been severe. One critic wondered about the psychological health of students, apparently too fragile, too delicate to deal with a 21-gun salute. Another suggested students were too insular and wrapped up in their own worlds. The irony is that gun salutes are a demonstration of a military's peaceful intentions, the highest honor a nation could render a warrior. So, by protecting the students, the University of Virginia, in fact, dishonored our veterans. Be sure to get your free subscription to my weekly newsletter at toddstarnes.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
So, I want to brag on another governor. I forgot about this part. I was just talking about Governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. But there's also, I told you that story about Florida, as reported by the Public Interest Legal Foundation, a.k.a. J. Christian Adams, that in a single county, they found 24,000 voter registrations that were some of them were double voting, some of them were not citizens, and on it goes. But here's the part I did not tell you that I want to. Of course, Florida has a new Republican governor who just, you know, remember the challenge to him by the socialist? And it was closer than it should have been, but Republican former Congressman Ron DeSantis won the governorship. And so in Palm Beach County, where nearly 967,000 voters were registered as of November 1st, they were criticized after the 2018 midterms for failing to complete state-mandated recounts by the deadline. Now, the county's then-elections chief was Susan Bucher. She was rebuked by a judge for allowing her staff to duplicate improperly completed ballots and other things. So Ron DeSantis, when he got elected, suspended Bucher, B-U-C-H-E-R is her name, and appointed West Palm Beach attorney Wendy Link. Link got $15 million from the county commission to get new voting machines, vote scanners, and other equipment that should be ready for the 2020 election. So that Ron DeSantis is another champion governor in the state of Florida fighting back and trying to prevent what it is that Eric Holder and the rest of the crew who want to sort of, by hook or crook, and mostly by crook, I'd say, take over this country for their socialist slash communist agenda. I'm telling you, I'm not embarrassed by saying that. I can tell you quite clearly that Barack Obama's history is bound up and hard to separate from his communist mentors, one of them being Frank Marshall Davis, who was an avid communist. And if you want to look it up, you can do that. But he was mentored by Frank Marshall Davis from the time he was a kid. Don't tell me that these leftist policies are just part of his own, you know, goodwill and imagination. They come from the hard left, and the hardest left is communism. All right, so just a second. Let me just pause for something nice. Okay, if I could do that. This is the time of year when we're getting ready for Christmas. I know you're not getting ready for Christmas yet, but you're thinking about it, aren't you? You're probably, you know, thinking about gifts, or you're thinking about getting your decorations out as soon as Thanksgiving is passed. But the reason we have to think about it soon is because Operation Christmas Child sends shoeboxes to children all around the world, and this year into 100 unreached people groups, and we have to get them to them by Christmas. So that's why we have to start now. So if you have participated in the past, you know all of this, but if you haven't, you need to find a place that's participating, or you can use a regular shoebox if you want, but they do have special shoeboxes that they make, and you can get them at your church probably. But if you're not sure about that part, visit SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. That's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC, and they'll tell you who's participating near you. You get the shoebox, you print it, you put it, all kinds of stuff for some, either a boy or a girl you choose. And you find some nice, cute, precious toy that will catch their eye and something they can use in a third world country. And then other practical things like, you know, hygiene. They'll give you a list of suggestions, but hygiene, toothbrushes, combs, things like that. And then you take it back to your church or to the drop-off place that you find at SamaritansPurse.org/OCC, and you'll do it, and then you'll do that by November 18th to the 25th. That's the collection time. And then Samaritan's Purse will send it to the kids. So that's how it works. So I'm hoping that you'll, you know, go get your business done and get that done early for some child in some country somewhere, and you know it will be a blessing. It's just bound to be. All right, back to the, you know, the grind of the moment. John Roberts did a good report yesterday on the impeachment process, which is starting. The hearings are starting tomorrow in the House. The impeachment inquiry under Adam Schiff. Oh, I have to tell you, let me see, where is it? Jim Jordan is moving to the House Intelligence Committee. This is really intriguing to me. Kevin McCarthy tweeted yesterday that I am appointing Jim Jordan to the Intelligence Committee. He's going to be replacing Representative Rick Crawford. It's going to be Jim Jordan will be on that committee during the impeachment process, and then Rick Crawford will go back. So this is interesting because, remember, you may recall, I surely do, that many of us were supporting Jim Jordan for Speaker of the House over Kevin McCarthy, which he probably should have been. But Kevin McCarthy had the strings to pull, and he prevailed. So it's pretty interesting that Kevin is asking Jim to do this. I think that's a good thing. That's a sign that they really are working together, and I'm very grateful for that. So Jim Jordan will be on the Intelligence Committee. The reason that's important is because that's Adam Schiff's committee, and even though impeachment inquiries never take place out of the Intelligence Committee, they take place in the Judiciary Committee, which is where Jim Jordan currently resides. That, you know, by some special dispensation, they've decided to do, meaning the left, the Democrats, have decided to do things a very different way. So Jim Jordan's moving over to that committee, and so that's good. By the way, Devin Nunes has formally requested that Adam Schiff testify in the impeachment inquiry, and he cites the precedent, Dana Rohrabacher, former congressman from California, who was a real champion. I just love Dana. He used to be a frequent guest of mine when I was in Chicago. Well, Dana has testified before the House on things that he knew about Russia. Dana had really a lot of information about what was going on in Eastern Europe. And so Nunez says there is a precedent to have a congressman testify before a congressional committee. And he basically says, on November 6th, you announced the beginning of public hearings associated with the Democrat Party's partisan impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump. Based on precedent and lack of jurisdiction, the House Intelligence Committee should not take the lead in conducting such hearings. However, by now the American people know your desire to see the duly elected president removed from office outweighs your sense of responsibility to run a functioning intelligence oversight committee. As the American public is now aware, on August 2019, you or your staff met with or talked to the whistleblower. Although you publicly claimed nothing inappropriate was discussed, the three committees deserve to hear directly from you the substance and circumstances surrounding any discussions conducted with the whistleblower and any instructions you issued regarding those discussions. Given that you have reneged on your public commitment to let the committees interview the whistleblower directly, you are the only individual who can provide clarity as to these observations. So, pretty gutsy. Devin Nunes continues to be very, very gutsy. And let me remind you that the left now is after Devin Nunes' two key staffers on this issue, coming after them for ethics charges, trying to out them in any way that they can. It's getting very dangerous for people that it has been for a long time. Very dangerous for people who are trying to do what's right. I should pause and let John Roberts give his report because he gives a lot of detail I won't be able to get to, and I have a lot of other things that I want to tell you about. So here's John Roberts on Fox, a special report last night.
The White House may have a transcript of its own to release tomorrow, a transcript of President Trump's first telephone call with the Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky back on April the 21st. Multiple sources, including Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, have said there was no issue at all with that call. And the White House would like to have it as a scene setter for when the hearings go public on Wednesday. President Trump made history today, the first U.S. president to attend the New York City Veterans Day Parade.
You are America's greatest living heroes.
He will spend one more night in New York at a speech to the Economic Club tomorrow before returning to Washington for the first public hearing in the impeachment inquiry.
Clearly, you're not going to be public because we don't get to have anybody from our side out there to tell our side of the story.
The latest battle is over who Republicans can call as witnesses. Devin Nunes, the ranking member of the Intelligence Committee, seeking approval for more than 9 witnesses, including the whistleblower and anyone he or she got the information from. Hunter Biden, Nellie Orr, a contractor for opposition research firm Fusion GPS, Tim Morrison, the former senior Europe and Russia expert at NSC, and Kurt Volker. They want him on the panel with Bill Taylor and George Kent Wednesday. It's likely that at least 2 of those witnesses will be vetoed by Chairman Adam Schiff. In a letter to Devin Nunes, Schiff saying that having the whistleblower testify would be, quote, redundant and unnecessary. He also said he has no interest in, quote, sham investigations of the Bidens.
All right, so that's part one. You know, let me just, an aside, President Trump attended the veterans event in New York City. John mentions that, but he doesn't mention that while the president was speaking, protesters in New York City were chanting, lock him up, lock him up. And so and they placed signs around so that Melania and he could see of dump Trump, you know, on apartment buildings and things like that. I actually have to tell you, I was concerned about him going to New York City and appearing publicly. I saw a screenshot of it last night. They had, you know, bulletproof plastic, clear plastic, all across the platform in front of him, and I was very happy for that. But that's the state of affairs in our country. The president has always been, you know, needed to be guarded heavily, but never, I don't think, have we had so much hatred. Remember the play that they produced on Broadway where, it may have been an off-Broadway production. It was The Killing of Trump. That was right, you know, just a few months after he'd been elected. I mean, it was like a takeoff of The Killing of Caesar, Julius Caesar, and the stabbing, and they show it. I mean, I just can't understand the glee with which people, you know, I wanted Barack Obama out of office. I could not stand his policies. I can't stand him now. I think he was wicked and evil, but I cannot imagine being gleeful at his death. Can't imagine that, or being gleeful at his destruction. Grateful, relieved, but not gleeful. But that's what we see. We just see like a salivating. It's like a mob, like you used to see in, you maybe you didn't, maybe you're not old enough to have seen the old Westerns where the mob would come after the, you know, the prisoner who was innocent, but they'd come with their pitchforks and just, they wanted him dead. They wanted him dead. It was like a contagious frenzy. And someone would have to calm them down. I feel like that's what we have. We have a contagious frenzy especially by our young people. It's just, it's so disturbing. It's so disturbing. Why would there ever be glee at taking out a president? This is something we, if it's necessary, which of course I don't believe it is, I think this is absolutely horrible what they're doing to this president. I don't think there's any grounds for this. But even if there were, to make a circus of it, to enjoy it, to cheer, it's just what's happened to us. I don't know. I can't answer that, at least quickly. And I want to move on because there was more to John's report, and I think we should stop and listen to it. Let's do that.
Republicans rejected the idea of written testimony from the whistleblower, saying it was nothing more than a political stunt, an attempt to show bipartisanship without any expectation to follow through. In a letter publicly released yesterday, the whistleblower's attorneys repeated the offer, saying, "We write today to assure you that were the Republicans to submit written questions to our client, we would absolutely follow through as promised." Texas Republican Congressman Will Hurd, who worked at the CIA for 9 years, says the identity of the whistleblower should be protected, but that there is benefit to hearing from Hunter Biden.
I'm curious to know how someone who doesn't have any experience in Ukraine or nor experience in a natural gas company becomes on the board of a natural gas company in Ukraine.
But some Democrats do believe that Schiff will allow at least some of the witnesses Republicans want to call.
My test is, do these witnesses have important information, knowledge, or evidence about the president's conduct? And if it passes that test, then we should call him.
One witness that Democrats may call, Lev Parnas, an associate of Rudy Giuliani's, who's charged with campaign finance violations. Fox News confirms that Parnas is prepared to tell Congress that all the way back in May, he told Ukrainian officials that unless the new government there opened an investigation into Joe and Hunter Biden, Vice President Mike Pence would not attend President Zelensky's swearing in and U.S. aid would be frozen.
What Parnas is apparently prepared to testify runs counter to everything that the president, Rudy Giuliani, and Ukrainian officials have said. Parnas has been subpoenaed by the House committees for documents and testimony. I'm told he has been producing documents. We will soon see what he has to say.
You know, I thank you, John, for that tag. True to the John Roberts, as much as he can, always puts a shot in on the president. He tips his hand as to his own personal opinion pretty readily. I think that potential testimony from the guy he just mentioned just a few minutes ago is not at all what they've been talking about. They've been talking about the alleged withholding of aid if the Ukrainians didn't investigate the president's presidential rival, Joe Biden, that's the way they put it, his potential presidential rival. And they weren't talking about Vice President Pence, you know, attending an event. That's a very different story, a very different situation. I would also like to say that, you know, this whole business of withholding aid if nations don't behave in a certain way has been the nature of, and I'm not saying, according to the transcript, President Trump did not do that, okay? Let me make that really clear before I even make this statement. But it has been the nature of our foreign aid for a long time, for better or for good. I remember, and I'll say the bad part, I witnessed firsthand how the Clintons withheld aid to countries that did not provide abortions. Then in Obama's administration, they withheld foreign aid to countries that did not teach graphic sex education to children. They also withheld aid if countries did not grant, gay marriage and recognize gay rights in their countries. That's what they did. We know that. That's all documented. So I'm saying, foreign aid has been withheld for good things. If you don't kill these people, stop persecuting these people, we won't give you aid. That's the way it goes. But now it's somehow discovered to be this brand new horrible crime. And as far as I can tell, President Trump didn't even do what they're saying. It's very twisted. It always is. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Mark Zed, one of the attorneys for Eric Sciaramella, the so-called impeachment inquiry whistleblower, tweeted conspicuously in January 2017 that the coup has started and that impeachment will follow ultimately. Then, in July 2017, Zed tweeted, "I predict at CNN will play a key role in at real Donald Trump not finishing out his full term as president." After that tweet, Zed went on to appear on CNN at least 11 times. It's plain for all to see. Actors in the upper echelon in our government have actively worked to overthrow the sitting president of the United States of America.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Why engaging our kids is so important. Mm. Why it's so important that we don't make them feel like they are a burden, like we just can't wait until they're out of the way. Like, the proven fact is that if we disregard our children as they are growing, we are really risking their adherence to the faith as adults.
Airing the Addisons, weekday afternoons at 2 Central on American Family Radio.
Folks, you know, I used to be a football fan. I stopped being a football fan. I could not stand the idea of people denigrating that flag and refusing to stand for it. My attitude about folks like that is, please leave. You ought to be thanking God every day of your life that you were born an American. I know that my country's not perfect, but I still love America.
Tune in to The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. An all-out assault is being waged on masculinity in our day. It's imperative that we rediscover Christ-like masculinity before it's too late. I've written a book on masculinity for fathers of 12-year-old boys. It's called The Boy to Man Book, and it draws upon the timeless wisdom of Solomon found in the book of Proverbs. As a father reads this book with his son, he is passing on to his son what the wisest man who ever lived wanted his son to know on his way to manhood. I wrote the book I wish I had had when my son was 12. As we approach Christmas, it might be worth thinking about whether there is a father of a 12-year-old boy you know who could benefit from a gift of this book. Robert Jeffress was kind enough to say, "Dads, you can't go wrong with this book." You can order a copy today at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Tomorrow, just 2 days after the nation paused to salute its veterans, an obscure federal board may blithely disregard their past service and abiding patriotic values. At issue is whether the Federal Thrift Savings Plan will compel the retirement funds of past and present servicemen and women and millions of other former and serving government employees to be invested in communist Chinese companies that help repress their own people and threaten ours. The board that oversees this pension system decided back in 2017 to do just that, starting next year. Its members are scheduled to revisit that decision on Wednesday, but their Wall Street advisors are urging them not to change course. The U.S. financial sector may be getting very rich by selling us out to China, but it's appalling and unacceptable to force people who love this country to do so. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And my solution is to say to Israel is you got $3.8 billion every single year. All right? If you want military aid, you're going to have to fundamentally change your relationship to the people of Gaza.
And so this is not just rejoining the Paris Climate Accords, which I will do right away. It's actually using every lever of foreign policy we have, from our foreign aid to countries making a contingent on climate action.
You would not necessarily want to leverage USAID to Israel to push him to do that, is what you're saying.
Well,
that would not be my first move. I'm not saying that would never happen.
We need to make sure that any such cooperation and funding is going to things that are compatible with U.S. objectives and with U.S. law.
We spend a few $1 billion on aid to Israel. Would you ever consider using that aid as leverage to get the Israeli government to act differently?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Question about Israel. Will you make American aid conditional on a freeze to settlement building?
It is the official policy of the United States of America to support a two-state solution. And if Israel is moving in the opposite direction, then everything is on the table.
And you would be prepared to...
Everything is on the table.
I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Got fired.
So there you go. Those are the Democratic candidates, all of them explaining how they either did, in the case of Joe Biden, or will use quid pro quo in funding different governments around the world if they do or do not do what they want them to do. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just telling you now this is what they are accusing President Trump of doing. And for some reason, with President Trump, if indeed he had done it, which he has not done it as far as I can tell, if he had done it, it would be perfectly within his rights. This is what they've been doing for decades. In fact, Byron York has an interesting article in Washington Examiner about how each of the people who have testified, we're now getting their testimony made public in this impeachment inquiry, have all said that President Trump helped Ukraine. But President Obama did not help Ukraine. President Obama, I think, sent blankets when they were fighting the Russians. Do you remember that? And President Trump, as soon as he got elected, sent actually heavy-duty weaponry in there to help them fight the Russians. But they're now accusing him of withholding aid from Ukraine unless he investigated President Trump's political rival, Joe Biden, which is just a twisted lie. It just is. And we'll talk more about that. I want to change the subject just for a second. Nikki Haley, of course, has been in the news, and we need to say something about it because it's important. She was on CBS with Nora O'Donnell, and this is part of what transpired.
And then the Secretary of State Tillerson went on to tell you the reason he resisted the president's decisions was because if he didn't, people would die. Do you memorialize that conversation? It definitely happened?
It absolutely happened. And instead of saying that to me, they should have been saying that to the president, not asking me to join them on their sidebar plan. It should have been, go tell the president what your differences are and quit if you don't like what he's doing. But to undermine a president is really a very dangerous thing. And it goes against the Constitution and it goes against what the American people want. And it was offensive.
Yeah, I have to tell you that there has been a coup against this president since the very beginning. And that's John Kelly. Nikki is accusing John Kelly, the chief of staff. Remember the general? Remember how President Trump bragged on him? He had lost a child in service to the country, and how tender President Trump was with him to that. And yet John Kelly cooperates with Rex Tillerson in doing exactly the opposite of what President Trump is requesting. And I remember that. Had a front row seat. I told you that at the time, that he was being undermined by the people sitting right there with him. And so now Nikki Haley in her book is exposing this completely. She's talking about this, and she's actually, Doug McElway had a report on it last night, and he tells a little bit, he expands it further, so let's listen.
It absolutely happened.
In her new book, President Trump's former ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, describes what she says was an attempt by then Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Chief of Staff John Kelly to enlist her in their effort to undermine the president. She writes, quote, Kelly and Tillerson confided in me that when they resisted the president, they weren't being insubordinate. They were trying to save the country.
And instead of saying that to me, they should have been saying that to the president. Not asking me to join them on their sidebar plan, but to undermine a president is really a very dangerous thing. And it goes against the Constitution, and it goes against what the American people want.
Neither man responded to our request for comment, but John Kelly told CBS, quote, if by resistance installing she means putting a staff process in place to ensure the president knew all the pros and cons of what policy decision he might be contemplating, then guilty as charged.
Yeah, so here's the thing. This was going on all of the time. Right from the very beginning, the president was in office. I mean, it's just been shocking. And again, I've been telling you about it. Actually, we tried to warn him many, many occasions, but there were so many bad people in the White House, we couldn't even actually get the information to him directly. So it's an amazing story, and someday someone will write a book about this. William Jacobson, who writes Legal Insurrection, he's been our guest before. He says, on December the 12th, 2016, a month after the presidential election and a month before Trump's inauguration, I called the attempt to nullify the 2016 election a coup attempt. I don't know if I was the first to use that word, but I was certainly earlier than most. The issue at the time was the interference with the Electoral College by intimidating electors into changing their votes using the now debunked claim of Russia collusion as the excuse. Remember that? They intimidated, they threatened electors if they didn't change their votes. The one thing you must understand about the unfolding media Democrat Electoral College coup attempt, and then he says, we are witnessing nothing short of an attempt to steal the election by some Democrats and a very supportive mainstream and left-wing media by causing electors in the Electoral College to go rogue and vote for Hillary. And then William writes, since then, as attempts to unseat Trump by any excuse and by any means possible developed, we use the C word numerous times and noted that the use of the term by others. For instance, some dare call the anti-Trump feeding frenzy a coup attempt. Slow-motion coup d'etat picks up steam. The coup has failed but continues. So when Mark Zaid, the lawyer for the quote-unquote whistleblower, was revealed to have described the efforts to unseat Trump as a coup soon after the inauguration, consider me not shocked. And just to remind you, Mark Zaid, the attorney for the whistleblower, Eric Chiaramella, said, he tweeted this on January 30th of 2017, right after the inauguration. The coup has started. As one falls, two more will take their place. Now then, that brings me to the whistleblower. Let me read this tweet. This is an attorney, Robert Barnes, and this is what he's saying about this whole process. Hidden accusers, secret jurors, star chamber hearings. Different rules of law depending on your politics. If they can do it to the president, they can do it to you. Meet the future of American justice if the left gets power back in their hands. And then he adds the hashtag @impeachmenthoax. And that's exactly what it is. I want to go back to the coup against the president. Roscoe Davis tweets the following. A National Security Advisor Robert Bryan says Vindman was one of the people, remember the officer who testified in uniform the first week of these impeachment inquiries? His name was Vindman. National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien says Vindman will be removed from his post at the White House National Security Council. O'Brien said that everyone at the NSC will be rotated back to their respective departments and he will be bringing in new people. Too many Obama holdovers and illegal leaks to the media. So that's the headline, but then there's more background here. All right, so he makes the comment that the Obama loyalists went right after General Flynn and would have gutted the National Security Council rather than get good people in place. McMaster was that holdover. And then he says, this is a kind of, these are tweets, so they are not necessarily, not like paragraphs in an article. So forgive me if I stumble a little bit. Found out that when McMaster took over the NSA, he moved Eric Chiaramella, this is the whistleblower, moved his office from the Eisenhower building that was next to Biden's old office to the West Wing next door to his, McMaster's, to act as his confidential assistant. And that's in quotes. Chiaramella was later dismissed for suspected leaking. Chiaramella, the whistleblower, was accused of being a major leaker while working for McMaster, who was then the head of the National Security Council. Abigail Grace and Sean Misko, both also Obama holdovers, were also suspected of leaking. Grace and Misko are now aides to Schiff and are who Chiaramella went to when the whistleleaker nonsense started. McMaster staffers were frequently accused of being behind leaks and were frequently seen talking to journalists at the local hangouts in D.C. Of course, Chiaramella was outed by Cernovich, that's Mike Cernovich, on June of 2017, claiming that the former Obama aide wanted to sabotage Trump foreign policy. It's never been fully revealed. Now, this is something I don't know about yet. I'm just reading to you what Roscoe writes here. It's never been fully revealed what went on with the Ukrainian parliamentarian Biklova's April 12, 2016 meetings with Liz Zintos and Eric Chiaramella that was coordinated by Alexandra Chalupa, but I'm sure it will be coming out. So that's a tease. Alexandra Chalupa is one of the persons on the list that the Republicans want to ask questions of in the inquiry hearings. So we'll see if they get anybody that they've asked for. By the way, Judicial Watch has gone over the White House visitor logs detailing meetings with of Eric Chiaramella, the whistleblower. So let me read what they found to you. He was assigned to the White House. Chiaramella reportedly was detailed to the Obama White House in 2015 and returned to the CIA during the Trump administration in 2017. But he was there initially in the Trump White House. The logs reveal Alexandra Chalupa, the name I just mentioned, a contractor hired by the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, during the 2016 election, and she coordinated with Ukrainians to investigate President Trump and his former campaign manager, Paul Manafort. Guess what? She visited the White House 27 times. The Republicans want to talk to Alexandra Chalupa. The White House visitor logs revealed the following individuals met with Eric Chiaramella while he was detailed to the Obama White House. And I'm not going to read all these names because you won't know them, but let me just say lots of them are connected to George Soros in various ways. A lot of people are, there's just Victoria Nuland, who was very close to Chiaramella, was there several times. The conclusion here from Tom Fitton is that Judicial Watch's analysis of the Obama White House visitor logs raises additional questions about the Obama administration, Ukraine, and the related impeachment scheme targeting President Trump. Both Chiaramella and Mrs. Chalupa should be questioned about the meetings documented in these visitor logs. So the irony is, of course, that the whistleblower was so connected with Barack Obama, as was this Alexandra Chalupa, and very involved in the impeachment process, but they were also very involved in the Obama White House. What is the connection? That's what, you know, inquiring minds want to know. And interestingly enough, this by Madeline Osborne, I think this is the Federalist. Last Wednesday, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, chaired by Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, published the under-redacted name of a man alleged to be the so-called whistleblower who helped launch impeachment proceedings against President Donald Trump. During his testimony, William Taylor, the charge d'affaires of the U.S. Embassy in Kiev, Ukraine, was asked by a staff lawyer on the committee whether the name Eric Chiaramella was familiar to him. "Does a person by the name of Eric Chiaramella ring a bell for you?" asked Steve Castor. "It doesn't," Taylor responded. "So, to your knowledge, you never had any communications with somebody by that name?" "Correct," Taylor said. The transcript of that exchange, which was not redacted, was published and publicly released by Schiff's committee last Wednesday. The New York Times, by the way, in September, all but outed this alleged whistleblower, Chiaramella, identifying him as a CIA employee and a Ukraine expert who had been detailed to the White House by former Obama CIA director John Brennan. And on it goes. These are things I've told you, but I know it's hard to remember all of it. I'm just telling you, we know who the whistleblower is. We know his past. We know his connections with the Obama White House, with John Brennan, with all the other people that want to destroy President Trump. And that's why they're fighting fiercely not to have him testify, just so you know. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.